Welcome back for another episode of Exploit Talk Radio. We're here in D.C. for ShmooCon 2006. Today we're going to talk about certificates and give you some more information on the ShmooCon talk lineup and have a little bit of stuff on food in the D.C. area. Okay, let's talk about digital certificates. Old-timers will call them X509 certificates. People who have some clue about what standards are involved might call them PCIC certificates. Technically, if you need to be precise, they're RFC 3459 certificates, I believe. There's some RFC number involved. Whatever you call them, they're public encryption keys wrapped in a Baroque and more or less standardized format that's used with encryption systems that use dual-key cryptography. For those of you who aren't crypto plumbers, dual-key cryptography is the generic term that some of us use because we'd rather not call them RSA keys, since RSA is a company name. Okay, so it's 2006, and there are lots of systems deployed with certificates. Most of them are broken one way or another. We've been taught, through a combination of laziness, corporate greed, and dot-com incompetence, to think that PKI is a dirty four-letter word. This might be true if you look at the overpriced and underpowered certificate technologies available back in the bad old dot-com days. But dual-key cryptography still rocks as a technology to distribute crypto keys for use in encryption and digital signatures. The specific issue I wanted to mention today is expired certificates. There are at least 200 certificate authorities out there. Check the list in Internet Explorer if you don't believe that number. A certificate authority is an organization that will sign your public key, delivering you a certificate where the signature can be allegedly interpreted to mean you can trust the identity of the holder of the private key that corresponds to the public key in the certificate. When there's a commercial entity, like VeriSign, performing the certificate authority function, this may or may not mean you can actually trust the certificate. Remember, their business models convince you that somebody died and made them God, and somehow you should conclude that you trust a certificate issued by them. This is not necessarily the kind of reason you would trust something, but that's what their business model is. So, in the case of VeriSign and other CAs, this trust business is a dodgy matter, and it's not clear you can actually infer any kind of trust. One reason you have to be concerned about trusting a certificate is that you need to know if the certificate is expired. Now, as you may have seen, an expired certificate, when presented to a working web browser, will peruse some sort of an error or dialog box. Now, unfortunately, most users have been taught to conclude on their own that they should just click the OK button when a dialog box pops up. It doesn't matter what the message is in the box, it's just you should click OK. Astoundingly, this includes the case where the dialog box has some nasty message like the certificate has expired, it's not valid, it doesn't match the website, things like that. Specifically, if the certificate is expired, you'll get one of these dialog boxes. Okay, so last September, that would have been 2005, I went east on a business trip. After my tickets were booked, the travel agency provided me a URL for one of those, you know, check your itinerary online kind of sites. And it used SSL, that's good, since it had credit card and other personal kind of information in the data. However, the website certificate had expired the day before my ticket was issued. I know this because when I get a dialog box that says, "Hey, dude, this cert's bogus," I actually go and check to see what's going on. I know that's kind of weird, but that's one of those cheap, exotic crypto consultant tricks that I learned a long time ago. Read the dialog boxes, actually interpret the message, bother to look at the certificate. You look like a wizard when you do this, typically in front of vendors who are trying to blow off the fact that they don't actually know how to do certs in their products. Okay, so I caught an expired certificate in the wild. Big deal. Now, what do I do about this? Well, it's an expired certificate. This is a crypto matter, and it's got to do with security, so I figured that's a security incident. It's not like, you know, the bad guys are invading the country, but it's a security incident. So, you know, in the general sense of the term. So I emailed the vendor's security contact email address. The vendor, who clearly doesn't really have very much clue about security, never bothered to respond to me. This is kind of interesting since they had personal information about me and I live in California, so I think they could even be caught almost violating a law, but whatever. Anyway, they did update the certificate one day later, so the problem got fixed. Of course, they never contacted me, so it just sort of happened by itself, and I have no proof that they actually cared that anybody reported it. So, you know, but the problem did get fixed, and that's part of the point, so that's a good thing. The other thing I did, since it was a security incident, was to email the certificate authority. In this case, the certificate authority was VeriSign. Now, you'd think that a company whose duty in life is to sell trust by delivering certificates would have an interest in situations where the certificate's not valid or you can't trust it. Their name's on it, they're the issuer, so presumably their trust is something that they actually would worry about. You know, if the world were using expired or otherwise invalid certificates, then they wouldn't mean anything and nobody would bother to trust VeriSign and therefore nobody would give them money for certificates. Anyway, I emailed security at VeriSign.com, which is, you know, one of the valid security contact things, and it, you know, the email did not bounce. That's nice. I got nothing back. Nothing. Nada. Zip. No email with a ticket number. No human response. No message scolding me that this wasn't a valid security incident in their opinion. Nothing. No little robot thing sending me anything. Anyway, I even forwarded the email back to a high-level VeriSign geek that I know. I still got no response. So, black hole. I totally didn't care. So what does this mean? Well, until you prove some other way to look at it, this means to me that VeriSign doesn't actually care if their certs are being misused. I kind of find that disturbing. I mean, I'm not surprised. You know, VeriSign's in this for the money, and the fact they actually use crypto and all those other things is clearly a side effect to the earn money part of the thing. Did I do anything wrong by reporting an expired certificate to a certificate authority? I don't think so. I think that's their business, and I think that's completely relevant. Did I spam them, or, you know, is that obnoxious? I mean, I don't think so. I sent one message with a couple of retries, just to be responsible, about one certificate. You know, I didn't send them 10,000 messages. I didn't do anything bizarre like that. I mean, I think this is kind of significant. If I can establish that nobody cares if VeriSign certificates are valid, then, you know, somebody out there would get a little excited about that. Like, for example, Visa or MasterCard or somebody whose credit card system is relying on the fact that they're using encryption, which is protected by the digital certificates underneath the web browsers. I think that VeriSign screwed up by not responding to me. I don't really care if they think I'm right that it's a security event that the cert expired. I mean, I could see VeriSign claiming it's the website operator's fault. I could also see the website operator claiming that it's VeriSign's fault because VeriSign should have been telling the website operator, not their users. Anyway, so something got messed up here. I don't think it's me. I think it's VeriSign. What's the moral of the story? Well, you should really check the lock icon in the browser the next time you use SSL, and in turn it's using certificates. And if you get a dialog box or a certificate problem, don't just ignore it. Don't just click OK. Click fatigue is a bad thing. Someday, instead of some sort of snarky podcast, you're going to be dealing with a security incident that's actually hiding behind a bogus SSL connection. There have been cases in the wild of bad things happening related to certificates. Spammers, people putting spyware in computers, stuff like that. This really has happened in the real world, and so I think it's something that you need to worry about. And if that kind of thing happened, boy, is that going to leave a mark. Okay, today's gratuitous vendor reference, we're going to do a little bit of a discussion about beer. You know, there are major food groups for geeks, beer, french fries, latte, you know, the usual things. Anyway, so I'm in D.C. and I go to downtown Washington, D.C. for a business meeting. And I end up going to Capital City Brewing Company. And you go to their website, sounds very frou-frou. It's the first brewery that was opened after Prohibition was rescinded in the 20s, la la la. It sounds really cool. You get there, it's a brand new office building in the middle of, you know, the part of downtown Washington, D.C., which is corporate Box Canyon, just like everywhere else on the universe. And it's some frou-frou, yuppie class brew pub restaurant thing that was started in 1992 or something to that effect. So anyway, I don't know where they get the brewery comment, but no evidence of it there. So go in there. It's a restaurant lunch joint. It's kind of nice and, you know, noisy, which is good. I was having a business meeting, so it provided some privacy. I had to check out the beer, of course. It was a brewery. So anyway, I had the porter. Porter was perfectly reasonable. I'm not sure that I take my friends there who like dark beer. I mean, I have some people who I know who their idea of stout is you pour a bathtub full of it, and then you stand a Dell 1U server up in it on end, and the stuff will stand up because the brew is that thick. Anyway, this was okay, but not impressive like that. I certainly wouldn't take my English friends there because, you know, I get kind of sensitive about trying to take English people to places that claim to serve decent beer in the U.S. because, you know, that's a bad scene if you do that wrong. I've watched people try to serve Ben Lurie Budweiser, and it's just, I know, I wish I could find the nearest bunker to hide out in. Anyway, it was an okay place. Not sure that I'd actually go back there again. I mean, I go there for a business meeting, but certainly wouldn't go there for the beer. If you want to check out other restaurant reviews, go to toughwaitress.com. Okay, ShmooCon. So let's talk about the talks. So the way ShmooCon is organized, there are three tracks. There's Build It, Boff It, and Break It. Break It is for discussions of discovered exploits or vulnerabilities in systems. So, you know, people breaking things. And, you know, breaking things covers lots of possible security research issues. Sometimes people bring up vulnerabilities. Sometimes somebody will drop a zero day. Sometimes people will just point out lame things that vendors are standing there and with a straight face claiming that are perfectly reasonable. You know, my firewall product has a telnet interface. Of course that's okay. You know, there are vendors who claim stupid things like that. Anyway, so that's what Breakit's about. Build It is for people who are building tools. You know, classic example is, you know, next generation Nmap or the next generation VOIP fuzzer or something like that. Tools that are related to the security world and be useful to have, and you know, so people doing presentations on that sort of thing. Boffit is a track built for boffs, birds of a feather sessions. Basically anything goes, you know, things where there would be a group of people who wanted to talk about a given subject. Policy enforcement, people trying to talk about voice issues, people trying to talk about hacking PlayStation portables, you know, whatever. So, I mean, we have a whole track built for that. The idea being that, you know, we're not going to presume that we know what kind of subjects everybody would want to talk about. We have a lockpicking talk and all sorts of things like that. Anyway, it's got three tracks. There was a submission process. There was a call for papers. People, submitted paper proposals. There was a selection committee. Papers got selected based on their merits. You know, there were papers that came in. There were, you know, it was a full spectrum of paper submissions. There were some that we didn't think deserved to be presented. There were some where the person sent the paper review in and, like, you know, it took 2 seconds. You know, three or four or five people all spoke up once and said, yeah, of course, this guy's in. It's the kind of thing you'd want to have happen. We tried to avoid having it be a beauty contest. We tried to make sure that people who didn't talk before had a chance to talk. We tried to make sure that we didn't put in retread talks, you know, some guy doing the same talk for the last 17 years and the same idea about, wow, you can take UDP packets and send weird stuff through them. It's like, that's nice. I thought it was nice when I heard about it in the early 80s. I still think it's nice. You know, try to avoid that. There's a little bit of talk retread syndrome going on in the security community these days. That's not too cool. It's basically, I mean, it's a real conference. This is intended to be presentations that are useful for the people in the trenches trying to keep their networks safe. So, you know, it's more like Black Hat than it is like DEF CON. I mean, it's not about the parties and the beer. It's about the fact that you go there and you'd actually find talks that are worth attending. I mean, yeah, you know, we get parties and socialization and such things. You know, the hallway boff is a very important part of the conference, you know, just like any other conference. But anyways, you know, it's got these three tracks. It's not a one-track conference. There's some people who do that style. That's actually very good, but it's a smaller, tends to be a smaller venue, and it's harder to get one of those that's like, you know, a full shot for multiple days. Something like Layer 1 will do that. And it's not the other end of the scale, like the very, very big conferences where you've got 15 tracks, and no matter who you are and what you're interested in, you're always going to have an issue because there'll be six talks at once you want to go to. So we tried to have some sort of scaled in the middle thing. Also, we've been trying to make sure that the size of the conference fits the attendee count, which is, you know, this whole thing about why we're trying to be firm about the, you know, how many people we have there and can they get in the room. You know, you wouldn't want to have a talk that's really awesome, wonderful, and then 6,000 people try to get into a room designed to hold 45 people. You know, that doesn't do anybody any good either. So anyway, three tracks, lots of speakers, check them out. ShmooCon 2006, Washington, D.C. Thank you very much for joining us today. That's it for this episode. We'll continue this through the week if the internet doesn't melt and we don't run into any network fashion emergencies. See y'all at ShmooCon.